Welcome to the Beacon Way podcast, where your hosts, Jennifer Christensen and Adrian Wilkerson, talk shop about what really works in today's digital marketing world. As the co-founders of Beacon Media and Marketing, Jennifer and Adrian have been a part of digital marketing since its early stages in the mid-2000s. Tune in as they shine light on what works and what doesn't in the ever-changing world of digital marketing for small businesses.
Welcome back to the Beacon Way podcast. This is Jennifer Christensen, one of your hosts, and very excited to have Shelby Robbins here today. She is the founder of Antelope Recovery. And full disclosure, she's one of our clients and somebody that I don't always get to be involved with our clients on the front end, but I got to be involved with her and some of the strategy up front. And there's just people that you meet that you're like, I love this person. They're doing great things in the world. And so I wanted to invite her on the podcast just to share her with all of you and have her share her story and why she's involved in this and the impact that they're making in Colorado. So that was a long introduction, but welcome, Shelby.
Thanks, Jennifer. Yeah, no, I know we interviewed lots of people to support us with making our website, and there was just instant chemistry on our end.
Yeah, felt the same thing. Yeah, I love that feeling. Yeah. It's the best thing in the world from our perspective when you get to work with people that you really mesh with and you care about their cause. Everything just works so much smoother, and I'm really fortunate that we're in that position as a company that we can do that. So it's been a good thing. For those that don't know you, tell us a little bit about you, your background, and Antelope Recovery is fairly new, correct?
Yeah, we opened this spring. So
like very new.
And then a full year.
And you're based in what part of Colorado again?
So I'm in Boulder. Colorado is where most of our team is, but we're pretty spread out.
So. If I remember right, you were saying there was just this huge gap, even in the area that you're in, where there just wasn't a lot of people offering the type of services that you're offering to teens.
We have a virtual intensive outpatient program for teens with substance use and mental health struggles. And we're primarily virtual. And the reason we're virtual is because it seems like it's unrealistic for every teen to get in-person care. Just driving, complex family structures where it's just not working for one parent to take off work and drive the kid around, et cetera. Creating a virtual option for teens and families, our hope was really to fill some important gaps. Kids who didn't need to be hospitalized but needed more than 1 hour of therapy a week. What do you do? What do you do with them?
Yeah. That's a very specific niche within the whole mental health field, right? So what led you to really pursue that?
Yeah, there's my personal story and personal background and then kind of the professional story. So I think professionally, I was working before this at a residential treatment program with teens who were pretty severe. They were not safe enough to live at home. They really needed to be removed from their environment and given that 24/7 kind of support. It was random, but the facility we were working at ended up getting caught up in the Colorado wildfires about 3 years ago. We didn't end up burning down, but the entire area around the facility did. And unfortunately, our fire insurance just shot through the roof at 10x, and we were a small kind of private program, and we just couldn't absorb those costs. So it was part of my job to find placement for all of our kids, and there was nothing. There was nothing at all for them. So most of our kiddos ended up getting on 6-month wait lists. It was like putting them wherever we could find a place for them. Some of those kids ended up passing away, really, because they ended up moving home too soon. And we just couldn't get them care. So I left that program very impacted by that process of having to close down. And me and a few coworkers from that facility decided that, hey, at least there should be a virtual option. There should at least be something where we can trust that a struggling child can get on the phone with someone for 2 hours a day, or if they're struggling, they have someone to call. That's, again, more than that 1 hour a week kind of care.
Had to be a really difficult experience for you to go through and just see people literally that fell through the cracks.
Yeah, it was really sad. It was, really impactful, especially with those kids. It was like we would wake up and brush our teeth together and have dinner together. Those residential facilities are very intimate places.
You really get to know people. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So would you say, just for you personally, that you're more of a founder by necessity? Is that something you ever saw yourself doing? Or is it just this need is so great, you just had to fill it?
Yeah, mostly that second option. I wasn't like a little girl. I want to start a healthcare company.
Right.
My temperament works for it. Weirdly, I think my personality is suited for the roller coaster of starting a business, which is nice. But yeah, the idea was definitely more out of necessity than some grand vision for saving humanity, kind of thing.
So if you can help people understand, you said it a little bit, but I think this is a little bit of a nuance now that is becoming more and more common in the mental health field. And that is that spot in between the once a week therapy and the residential treatment. So how would you describe that area? What are we calling that now?
Yeah, there's a huge range of the types of clients that we're seeing who fall in that area. I'm noticing mostly two different types of kids. So I can describe both of them. The first type of kiddo that we're seeing that falls in that area is a kid who's had a recent mental health crisis, who doesn't have any long-term care options. So those are kids who recently had a suicide attempt, recently overdosed, recently had a psychotic episode, who had some big mental health event in their life, and they no longer can afford or have options to be in longer-term care. Maybe they were at the emergency room for 2 weeks, but now there's no more beds, so there's just no option for that type of long-term care for most people. So for that type of client, what we do is what we call like a step-down service. So we can do up to about 20 hours of support for that child per week, usually for 3 to 6 months, just supporting them and structuring themselves, their identity, getting really stable and getting that longer term support that they're just not able to get elsewhere. The other type of kid we're seeing is going in the other direction. So we're getting kids who maybe they're seeing a therapist every week. They haven't had any big thing happen, but their life is slowly unraveling and parents just don't know what to do. They're like, we're seeing a therapist. We feel like we're doing all the right things, but my kid's behavior is starting to get really out of control. Maybe they're starting to vape every day or starting to miss class or their grades are falling. So for that type of client, we might do maybe 2 or 3 hours a week and just have really close eyes on how can we make sure this doesn't escalate into some sort of crisis. So it's a little more preventative.
Got it. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I feel like just as a parent, these are conversations I've had with other parents over the years. My kids are grown now, but I know people that have been in those situations and there wasn't really a solution. So is this new to the mental health in your experience? Is this fairly new to what we're seeing as far as what's even being offered? Like, when did these kind of services start?
Yeah. So intensive outpatient programming and outpatient programming has been around really since the 80s. So that's not new. Very tried and true, tested, evidence-based type of program structure that works really well for kids. Virtual care and the virtual version of this has been slowly creeping into the mental health space really for the last 10 years, but it wasn't until COVID happened that suddenly all of the in-person programs had to figure out, oh no, can we do this online? What does this mean? How can we do more acute care virtually? Is that responsible? How do we do that? So that's, I think, really over the last 3 years, people have been, you know, wrestling with that. Can we figure this out?
Got it. Okay. But 10 years is still a significant amount of time. Yeah. And it's still based on the outpatient model, which you said there's good evidence-based success with that. Is there more evidence-based success with that in the teen realm or just all through, like teen, adult, all throughout?
To ask our clinical director about that. There's definitely more research on the adult recovery side of things. Teens get passed over quite a bit, for all sorts of reasons. And yeah, there's definitely what is the standard treatment for teens is outpatient and IMP. Okay.
So as far as Antelope Recovery and just now that you've gotten this off the ground and congratulations, because I know that is that first step is just obviously the hardest, no question, right? When you're first starting something, what is your vision? What are you hoping to see even 2 years from now, 5 years from now, of where you guys would be?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a fun question for me to think about outside of all the weeds.
Oh, I know. I feel like even as a founder myself, even totally different industry, but you're always going back and forth, right? It's like the vision, which you get to glimpse at, and then it's okay in the weeds. I have to make this happen on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. For us, it's lots of regulations. Yeah. All the paperwork, but yeah, I think for us, the big point is, can we help as many kids as possible get the highest quality care as possible? So how do we reach volume without losing quality? And so far, there's a lot of different ways we're experimenting with how we might do that. I think for us, it could really look like, do we invest more in creating innovative virtual products that keep kids engaged online? So that's one of the big challenges with virtual care is, can a 13-year-old boy with ADHD sit in front of a computer for 10 hours a week? Like, how do you make that work? So that's looked at having therapy groups in a Minecraft space. Can we play video games virtually, or can we do a group while kids are on the phone going on a walk and they're all together outside? I think we're really exploring that space right now. And I'm excited to see where it ends up. I know we all have tabs on the AI developments that are happening, which are really exciting. And can that support us with solving that engagement problem? I saw some crazy statistic the other day. I think it was 60% of kids who get into treatment don't finish. It's like they only show up to one session and then leave.
Wow.
Solving that engagement problem is huge.
I'm not surprised, but we're actually working with another client right now, but they have a pretty amazing product, which is basically like a personalized iPad with engagement pieces with it for mental health. And because that's what they were seeing for behavioral health inpatient, even outpatient, actually, too, both. But they were seeing that people just were not, they just couldn't get past that first hump. And the ones that could get past the first hump, really, obviously, the outcomes and successes are just so substantial. But part of it is just the addiction in our world of online and many different things. But I see people really trying to address that issue. Yeah, which is...
Yeah, it's been really hopeful, I think, seeing all the new developments on just that engagement problem.
I'm actually speaking on AI next week. So at the Mental Health Marketing Conference, of how the impact of that. I'm speaking at it more from a marketing perspective because that's my expertise. But I believe it's going to impact every industry. And I think that it's touchy when it comes to mental health, for sure, anything in healthcare. But I think we're going to find a way around it. I think it's There's just too much potential of how it could assist for us not to figure out the ethical pieces and the concerns.
Great. I'm excited. I think I'm attending that virtually.
So what have you learned over the past 6 months through this process? I'm going to switch a little bit into just founder mode of starting something like this, getting it off the ground. What would you say has been the biggest challenge and what has been the biggest maybe positive aha that you've gotten out of it?
It's a great question. Yeah, I think as far as challenges go, for me, it's really been like looking into the big black box that is healthcare. So what exactly do we need in order to open? What are the liabilities? What are the regulations? And
yeah,
every turn we make that we think we're free, there's some other kind of mobster feeling organization. Hey, you got to pay us $3,000. This other thing. Wait, what? So that for me has been really illuminating of just the ins and outs of how does insurance work? How does insurance bill for this? What kinds of payment structures are people using and why? And how come people don't know how much their healthcare bill is going to be at the end of the week? So really getting into those kinds of nitty-gritty details for me has been a huge learning and really exciting. I've really enjoyed kind of diving into that and exposing some of it and really thinking with our team of how can we do this differently and how can we be more transparent with the families who we're working with. And
I love that.
What does it really look like to have a relationship with the current state of our healthcare system? That's been, in hindsight, I guess I could have predicted that might happen, but the degree to which it's been a learning curve for me was new. And then as far as like positive learnings, or rather than challenges, but big successes, I think really getting a handle on building a startup team for me has been one of the most rewarding parts of the journey. I think our team is so committed and dedicated and strong, and everyone's really here for deeply personal reasons. And having a team like that has been incredible. It's been a privilege to work with our crew, and powerful to see what happens when you get a bunch of people willing to risk it all in a startup together.
Right? Yeah.
Been great.
That's one of the things I didn't even know in starting a business of how impactful that would be for me. It really, at the end of the day, when you see people sacrifice for a bigger cause, and then the rewards, like I remember when our first team member, because a lot of our team members are very young and early 20s, like when she bought her first house. And I don't know, like it was so impactful. It was like, okay, we get to be a part of that. Like we're committed to her. She's committed to us. We're doing this together. It's not just about, I think sometimes we miss that in business. And I know in healthcare, that's more common. Like you're thinking more of the cause. I get that. In my world, that isn't super common. It's more about maybe thinking about making the money. But at the end of the day, I just don't feel like that satisfies. It's what you get to do in community with other people that's so impactful. It's just, and then you get to share some of the stress a little bit. I mean, ultimately, it's all on your shoulders, but.
I'm slowly learning how to ask for help.
Are you?
Can I do that?
I love that. That's wonderful. I have every confidence. Mm-hmm. Again, I have a really good intuition about people, and I'll often go to Adrienne, my partner, and tell her, like, I know this one's going to make it. And I said that to her after I met you. I was like, yep, this is one. I know, because when you have, again, it's people first. So when you have the right people, and most of us all have to figure out the problems as we face them along the way. But it's how you figure that out that matters. So I guess what I heard on your vision, though, is just helping the most amount of people that you can, and doing it in a way that you're not reducing quality. And a transparency is one of your huge values with parents and people that are involved, which is awesome. Are you expanding outside of Colorado eventually? Possibly, but for right now, it's mainly Colorado, right?
Yeah. We're really excited to start thinking about expanding.
Yeah.
I'll definitely be a year or two out.
But, yeah.
We have our wish list of states and definitely, again, just strategic questions for us of what states can we easily get licensed in? Which ones have the highest need?
Yeah.
Which ones have enough therapists that we could even hire to have a program?
That's become a huge issue, I'm sure. Just tip, and for whoever's listening, I know therapists do listen to this podcast as well, but what we're seeing as a trend, two major things we're seeing as a trend, because we're working with about 190 now, like in mental health or healthcare. If the company has a good culture and that's reflected clearly online, so it's not just talked about, but they can actually see online that it does have a good culture as far as the people that work there. The retention and attraction of new therapists is tremendous. It's so much easier to hire that way because that's what people are really looking for, is that authenticity, even if it's a slightly lower wage. So we've seen that across the board. At first it was anecdotal. Now I'm like, okay, these are real statistics, right? And then the other trend that we're seeing is self-referring teens. So are you guys seeing that as well a little bit?
Yeah. I think half of our teen groups this summer were all teens who found us, who had to drag their parents into allowing them to go, which was mind-boggling to
us. I have only seen that over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But that blew me away because it just shows you generationally we're at such a different spot when it comes to understanding mental health.
Yeah, it's been great for us. I think we're used to getting the very sassy, eye-rolling teen who's, my parents made me come here, having to break through those walls. And we're getting kids who just cannot wait to be in therapy and explore themselves. And it's been really sweet to see that change. And also sad. So a lot of them have friends who are really struggling. And I think COVID really normalized that we all have mental health issues and struggle.
Yeah, it's almost twofold, right? Like the good part is the stigma seems to be completely reduced in the younger generation. But the other part is it's almost an epidemic of how many people are struggling. So would you say that's pretty fair?
Yeah, definitely. So many kids. It's been pretty mind-boggling.
It really is. I agree. But I'm so glad you guys are doing what you're doing. I'm so glad you got it off the ground and got support. Are you still taking like investor support, or are you past that point where you guys add in that journey part now?
Right. Yeah. So we raised a small kind of friends and family round and we're done taking investment money for now. And again, just as we start planning our next year, we're looking at raising a Series A. What would that look like? How big, how fast would we want to go? We were really intentional about doing a kind of community fundraising round. We used WeFunder so that we didn't have big investors with strong agendas telling us how to do therapy. I think we've seen some of the really early pioneers in mental health tech really struggle with how do we maintain the therapeutic relationship and how do we have an ethical practice when we're having to scale, like blitz scale. What does that mean? Right now, we don't have those pressures on us, which we really like. We're cautiously searching. I think we found a few partners we really like that we're in conversation with. So we'll see how that pans out.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So good. It was so good catching up with you. Thank you for sharing. I know we went all across the board, everything from founder to kids and all of that, but I think it's all relevant. And I just really appreciate your transparency and openness to talking about just the reality, the state of where things are.
No, thank you so much, Jennifer. It's always so enjoyable to talk with you and feel like we could talk for another few hours.
I totally agree.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Beacon Way. We hope you enjoyed it and had some good takeaways. Please subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if you've enjoyed the show, please give us some stars on your podcast channel of choice. For more information, tips, and notes from the show, check us out at beaconmm.com. For more information on how Beacon can help market your business, email us at welcome@beaconmm.com.